So we want to pick up in November the 28th, 1923, and this is volume 16. Jesus says, and look at the heading, he's going to be talking about the newborn of the divine will. And he says, the cross of the divine will was the largest and the longest for Jesus. I think over the word cross, put the cost, what it cost him to give us the divine will was greater than anything else. So Louisa said, I was always sunken in the holy will of my Jesus. And I seem to see my little soul as a newborn baby. When blessed Jesus, whom blessed Jesus was raising in his arms with the breath of his will. Now notice the breath of his will, because we started out in Genesis chapter 2, 7 with the breath of God. Okay, so this is recreation, isn't it? The breath of his will then bringing us to this higher plane. He does so with such jealousy as to want that she look at nothing, hear nothing, and touch nothing. Okay, there's the jealousy of the Lord that wants the soul for himself. Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. To love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and will. And so that nothing might distract her, he kept her enchanted with the sweet enchantment of his teachings on his most holy will. And the little newborn would grow and be nourished with the breath of the will of her Jesus. And not only this, but he covered me, she said, with many little crosses of light. Now, I want you to take note of that, because we're going to have another long paragraph, and then the long paragraph after that is going to be the cross of light. Okay, so it's being introduced here. He covered me with little crosses of light. Now, before I even finish this sentence, I want you to note that this is different than what you heard in volumes 1 to 7. In volumes 1 to 7, there were not crosses of light. She was getting the cross of Calvary. Okay. So, crosses of light in such a way that in looking at myself, I could see a cross of light impressed in each part of me. And Jesus enjoyed himself in multiplying these crosses and in wanting me to keep my gaze fixed on him in order to count all his words which serve me as food and means of growth. Okay, so the next paragraph then, now the little newborn then, you're actually born to the life of the resurrection. That's what it is to be permanently in the divine will, literally living the life of the resurrection. So Jesus then told me, my little daughter, my newborn in the divine will, my volition conceived you, made you be born, and now raises you with love. Now put beside that Ezekiel 16. Because in Ezekiel chapter 16, you get the story of the Lord choosing the people of Israel. And actually the summary here is not awfully different from what you get in Ezekiel 16. So don't you see with how much love I hold you in my arms and do not permit you to take any other food but the breath of my will? Okay, now I want you to take great note of the simple thing that I've read. I do not permit that you take any other food but the breath of my will. When we start out on this journey, we're still feeding from other sources. Okay, but the deeper you go in the divine will, the more you realize you can't mix the drinks, if I can use our language. Is that okay? And you have to let some things go. You have to leave the ways you had before. They have to go. And the saints you studied before and the stuff about prayer you studied before, that all has to be sort of preparation for this. But when you go into this, you let it go. Is there anything wrong with it? No. It's just that life offers you good, better and best. Okay. So when you came out of the world, you were given the good of coming into a relationship with God. If you went into renewal circles and that kind of stuff, they were offering you better. They were letting you learn how to live with the Holy Spirit inspiring you. You come to the divine will and you get God's best. Now, the enemy of the best is the better. and the enemy of the better is the good. Have you got that one? Mm-hmm. Now, that's terribly important to grasp that, because there are people who will say, well, I'm better than the folks outside. Okay, you may be, but if the Lord is offering you the best, wouldn't you go for it? That's why St. Thérèse of Lisieux teaches very strongly that you go to God with empty hands. You're not clinging to the past. So you're completely open to what he's going to give you. And he's in the divine will, he's giving you his highest and his best. Okay. So he's saying the breath of his will is the most beautiful, the dearest and the most precious thing which has been issued in creation until now. That's himself saying it. And this is the newborn of the divine will, that a person could live at this level is the best thing he's done up to now. Therefore, I will keep you with such jealousy as to let no one touch my newborn. She has to be guided by him alone, which is Deuteronomy 32 and verse 15. The Lord alone was her guide. My will be everything for you. Now, the thing we have to be careful about with people coming into the divine will is that the divine will isn't everything. They have lots of other things as well, including lots of other devotions and everything. The divine will be life, food, garment, clothing and cross for you. In other words, it'll cost. Because since the divine will is the greatest thing, it would not be fitting for your Jesus to mix it with other things which are not a birth of our will. Now, there you have it given to you again in much better words than I said. The Lord is saying you can't mix this with other foods. But we do. And that's why gradually we have to let go and let go and let God. Okay. Therefore, he said, forget everything. Now, I want to give you Isaiah 43, verses 18 to 20 for that. There's no need to remember the past. Behold, I'm doing a new thing. It's coming to light even now. Try and see it. Okay. So forget everything so that no other waters may surround you. Now, the waters and the food are the same thing. Nothing else is going to feed you. Inside and out, but the immense sea of the eternal volition. Now, you don't realize that if we actually get to this point, the Lord has simplified our lives down absolutely, taken all the complications out of it. But if you're trying to run two spiritualities at the same time, you're in real trouble. In other words, charismatic people find it very difficult to let go of the charismatic stuff. And those like myself who've been in Carmelite contemplation all our lives find that difficult to let go as well. That's just to give you two examples. So we can find it difficult to let go of something to take on this new thing. I want in you the honour, the nobility, the decorum and the of the true newborn daughter of my will. In other words, Louisa has to show a completely new way of living with God. On hearing this, instead of rejoicing, I felt myself die of confusion. And I only had the courage to say, Jesus, my love, I am little, it's true. I see it. But I'm also a bad little one. That's your Cativa. And yet you are saying all this. How can this be? Maybe you want to make fun of me. I know that many make you cry, and to be cheered from your crying, you want to amuse yourself with me by playing this joke on me. But even though I feel confusion because of your jokes, go ahead and do it. And let the joke be your will of your will. So she hasn't a clue what he's getting at. She just can't get it. And Jesus, pressing me more tightly to himself, said, no, no, your Jesus does not make fun of you. I enjoy myself, yes. And the sure sign that what I tell you is true are the crosses of light. Now, you see, the extraordinary thing is he gave her these crosses of light. And instead of doing the perfectly womanly thing of saying, what's that? Why are you giving me that? She didn't even look at them. So he's bringing her to look at this, the crosses of light. So I want you to put an arrow from paragraph one to the paragraph three and put a heading, Cross of Light. So it was introduced up there and it's going to be explained down here. So Jesus says, know, my daughter, that the largest, the longest cross for my humanity, which never left me, was the divine will, because he had to do all the preparations for the living in the divine will. Even more, each act of the human will opposed to the divine was a distinct cross for the supreme will impressed in my inmost humanity. Try and look at that and see if it is even possible to take it on board. Because you'd need a massive computer to try and say, put 21 and 21 zeros after it for the number of crosses. He says each act against the divine will, he had to bear it. In fact, when the human will moves from the earth in order to act, the divine moves from heaven. We can't operate without God. Because if the divine will removes himself from us, we're gone, we're finished. So when the human will moves from the earth in order to act, the divine will moves from heaven in order to encounter the human volition. Watch this. And make it one with its own. So the divine comes to meet the human. So as to make torrents of grace, light and sanctity flow in that act. But by not receiving the encounter with the divine, the human will puts itself as though at war against its creator. So instead of flowing together, they're actually in opposition. And it rejects into the celestial regions the good, the light and the sanctity which he was about to pour on it. That's, we have an expression for that, and it's throwing something back in a person's face. In other words, the gifts are simply thrown back. We're not interested. So he's saying that every time we reject the divine will, that we're actually throwing his grace, his sanctity, his beauty back into him. We are not benefiting, and he has to keep it back himself. So it's suspended. It's not gone. And those living in the divine will can pick up all these suspended graces. So the supreme will is offended, wanting to be repaid by Jesus incarnate. And in each act of the human will, it inflicted a cross upon Jesus incarnate. I'm saying Jesus incarnate just to make this very clear. And even though together with the cross, Jesus received all the good rejected by them. Do you see that the person who makes the reparation to the divine will actually receives the stuff? That's like saying you're trying to make up to somebody who's been very highly insulted by someone flinging something back in your face, and the person says, would you like it? It's a gorgeous cardigan. They don't want it. Would you take it? Because they have already given this. They don't want to take it back. Taking it back is not going to do any good to them. Only by giving this gift, it's going to mean something to them. And in the divine will, the Lord will give us the graces that have been rejected by others. Simply because we're open, we want to do it, we want to make reparation for them and so on. But Jesus did it all first. Okay. So the supreme will offended, wanted to be repaid by Jesus incarnate. And in each act of the human will, the divine will inflicted a cross upon Jesus. And even though together with the cross, Jesus received all the good rejected by them, in order to keep it deposited within Jesus for the time when the creature would dispose herself to receive into her acts the encounter with the divine will. Now notice there's something very important there. He's saying that in each one of our acts, there should be an actual encounter with God. In each one of them, not in special moments of liturgy, not in special moments of heightened experience, but in every single act. In spite of this, Jesus said, I could not exempt myself from feeling the intense pain of so many crosses. Look at me in my interior. So this is the interior passion ad intra. This is the interior passion. Look at me in my interior. How many billions of crosses? That's why I chose the number 21 with 21 knots after it. How many billions of crosses my humanity contained. Now you see why it was amazing that Louisa didn't ask what the meaning of these crosses were that she got. Okay. She's going to find out. Therefore, the crosses of my will are incalculable. Incalculable. Its pain was infinite, and I moaned under the weight of an infinite pain. Now, when you get up beyond volume 23, you'll hear Louisa actually saying the privations she had in volumes 1 to 12 were nothing. Now she says it's an infinite pain because she's on that level. She has reached that level that Jesus wanted to bring her to. It's an infinite pain. This infinite pain had such power. Now notice that it's not the suffering. It's what can be done with that suffering in the divine will. Had such power as to give me death at each instant and to give me a cross for each act of the human will opposed to the divine. Now, if I was doing this for the first time, and it isn't my first time, I'd want to write that out on a sheet of paper by myself and say, every single time you oppose God's will, you have given him a cross. Talking to me, not talking to anybody else. Because I can make myself hear it if I do that. I write a little note to myself. And then I look at it and say, God, you better start surrendering quick. Otherwise, you're responsible for so many more crosses. And now that you know about it, it'll be infinitely worse because there's the knowledge going with it. Okay. Let me just read that again. This infinite pain had such power as to give me death at each instant and to give me a cross for each act of the human will opposed to the divine. The cross of my will is not made of wood, which only makes one feel the weight and the pain. Rather, it is a cross of light and fire. Louisa ought to be getting blood pressure at this stage because she's been given a whole lot of these and she never even asked about them. Okay, it's a cross of light and fire. Now, those of you who are at the scripture class this morning know that God is light and fire. Okay, the divine will is light. 1 Timothy 6:16, isn't it? He dwells in unapproachable light. Hebrews 10:29, I think it's 10. Our God is a consuming fire. Okay, God is light and fire. And it burns and it consumes and it impresses itself in such a way as to form one single thing with one's very nature. This is why you're hearing Louisa beginning. Well, she began around volume 11, I think, saying that the pain that was coming from the privation was infinitely worse than it was before. And it's going deeper and deeper. And Jesus says that this cross of light actually burns and consumes and impresses itself on your very nature, your very being. If I wanted to tell you of a cross which my divine will gave me, Jesus said, I should braid all the acts of the creatures. Now, braid, the word braid is given because she does embroidery. I should braid all the acts of creatures, make them present to you, and let you touch with your own hand how my will, demanding fair satisfaction, inflicted on me cross upon cross. So you see that the revelation we're getting tells you that what you see on your crucifix is nothing to what he actually experienced interiorly. That's the incredible thing. And nobody knew this before he told Louisa. She's the first that he's told. Had it perhaps not been a human will that offended the divine will and broke up with it? That's Adam. So was now a divine will to crucify and cause pain to my human will, nature and will. So here's the second Adam making reparation for all the acts of the first Adam. All the rest of man can be called superficial, the fount, the root, the substance of either evil or good is in the depths of the will. Now, that cannot be emphasized enough. And right from volume one, you've heard Jesus say over and over and over to Louisa, don't put your will into it. Okay, you want to feel a bit resentful. Don't put your will into it. Leave it as a superficial feeling and it'll go away. But if you put your will into it, then you're going to have the sin of resentment, which is a different subject altogether, and it will destroy the relationship with God. So all the rest can be called superficial. The fount, the root, the substance of either good or evil is in the depth of the will. Therefore, only the divine will could make me expiate the evil of so many human wills. And this is why I wanted you all in my will. Notice the 100%. To make known what this divine will has done, what it made me suffer, and what it wants to do. So that's a subject that needs to be dealt with at some stage as a teaching subject, the history of the divine will. Not only how it came to be revealed, but this history. This history that's spoken about here. That's why I wanted you all in my will, to make known what the divine will has done, what it made me do. This is all the interior passion of Jesus and what it wants to do. And this is why you are marked with many crosses of light. Now, she hadn't the curiosity to ask him. Maybe she was afraid, I don't know. Because your cross has been my will. I think that's quite clear from all the writings. Which has changed everything into light in order to dispose you to be the true newborn of my will. Now, notice the issue is being transformed into light. If you go back to Mount Tabor in the Gospels, that's when the apostles first saw Jesus transformed into light. In other words, they had their first inkling, real inkling of his divinity. Even walking on water didn't do it for them. But when they saw him transformed into light. So that's Mount Tabor. Okay. And it's Psalm 104, verse 3. Lord, you are clothed in majesty. You are wrapped in a robe of light. Okay. So what Jesus is saying here is that the whole journey into the 100% giving in the divine will is that we have to change from muck to light. Excuse my language. That's quite a journey. And even when we think we're holy and all the rest of it, you just put his light on it and then you realise we don't know what holiness is and we don't know what purity and light is. We don't have a clue. And it's only when the Lord moves in to purify some area inside of us that we know the pain of shifting from that position to that position. But you will find when you get up to about volume 25, maybe a little bit higher, I'm not completely certain, that the Lord says Louisa has already been transformed into light. And it's at that point she's at her most powerful. Why? Because she's most like him. Psalm 82, verse 6, I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. And that therefore we have to be like him, you know. I think it was St. John that said it. We will be like him when we see him as he really is. So the transformation that has to happen to us between life on the earth, death, purgatory and heaven is the transformation into light. Because all that can go into heaven is light, that's God, and love, that's God. Nothing else. Only what is of him can go back. And so the divine will allows us to be transformed step by step. That's why I love the sip by sip bit. To do it step by step, day by day, until he can transform us into light. It's a most wonderful journey. Therefore, this is not devotion at all. This is an incredible journey. This is a restarting of the church. This is creating a future full of hope for the church and the world. And this is the human race going back to its origin and allowing God to bring it to where he wants it to go. So, because your cross has been my will, he said, which has changed everything into light, in order to dispose you to be the true newborn of my will. True means it's actually happening in reality, it's just not theory. In whom I will entrust the secrets, the joys and the sorrows of the divine will as to a faithful daughter. Now, daughter's the faithfulness. And who, uniting herself to my acts, may open the heavens and make it descend upon the earth to make it known, received and loved. And for that, I want to give you Isaiah 63, 1 to 2, where the prophet asked the Lord to break open the heavens and come down, that this is the only solution to the planet Earth. It's a wonderful piece, but it needs a lot of attention. So December the 4th, 1923, I want to give you a heading, Knowledge. Louisa said, I was thinking about what I'm writing on the most holy will of my Jesus. The fact that blessed Jesus wants to say many sublime things about his holy will is right, because anything that can be said about it, its height, its greatness, its prodigies, all is good. Even more, everything is little compared to what could be said. But that continuous braiding this poor soul of mine with the divine will, this shouldn't be there. Now, I have a funny feeling that's not coming from Louisa. I have a funny feeling that's coming from the priests who are saying to her, listen, you're obviously confusing this business. If God is trying to make a revelation to the church, can't he just make it? Instead of you inserting yourself into every line of it, you know, because I think many of her questions are not herself at all. And the answer is going to be very interesting. But this continuous braiding of my poor soul with it, that shouldn't be done. His will is what he should make known, not me. My poor person should not exist. But you see, we're not going to have no divine will on earth as it is in heaven if her soul doesn't exist. More so, since the whole thing is his and not mine. For me, there's nothing left but the confusion of what he tells me. But in spite of this, obedience forces me to write not only about the divine will, but also about the braiding he wants to make between me and the divine will. See what I'm saying? That the question is coming from outside of her. And the insistence on writing it all, because the priest only gets it when she writes it. He doesn't get it unless she actually writes it. So Jesus is going to give her an answer that should be familiar by now. He has to use somebody. Okay. So while I was thinking about this, my sweet Jesus came out from within my interior. That's your Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. And squeezing me to himself, he told me, my daughter, you are always my newborn of my will. And besides, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, what I love about that, and he's told her quite a number of times that she's wrong on things, that you can be a saint and you can be wrong. We have, well, maybe I grew up with this funny idea that a saint would be right about everything. Do you know what I mean? And some people who are right about everything think they're saints. And Jesus said to her, you are the newborn of my will, but you're wrong as well. I love this. You want me to speak about my will and to make it known. And the one who must be the channel, the spokesperson, the instrument to make it known couldn't exist, shouldn't exist. Well, what about Moses? What about Joseph? What about David? What about all the prophets? What about all the saints? I mean, the Lord has to use somebody. He has to choose somebody. If this thing were to remain between you and me, maybe it could work. But since I want my will to have its kingdom, in other words, it has to have the earth. The earth is the kingdom. That's Revelation 21. It has to have its kingdom. And at the end of Revelation, you hear them singing that the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ have come. Okay, and the kingdom is not formed of one person alone, but of many people and people of different conditions. It's therefore necessary that not only my will, the goods it contains, the nobility of those who will want to live in this kingdom. Now, this kingdom is all Revelation 21, the New Jerusalem. Okay. The good, the happiness, the order, the harmony which each one will possess should be known. But also the one whom my goodness has chosen as the origin and the beginning of such a great good. Like, how would you understand the Exodus without Moses? You wouldn't. How would you understand the extraordinary miracles that happened in Egypt if there was no Joseph to save the world at the time? So if God wasn't working through these people, how would this happen and how would God be glorified? Louisa isn't getting this clear in her head. Braiding you together with my will, raising you above all things of creation means nothing other, watch this, than giving more importance to my will, raising it higher and giving it more weight. Okay, it's invested in someone and you see it actually operating. And so the divine will spreading among us all means that he can do this in each soul as much as possible. And therefore, the more souls that come into this, then the more the kingdom is spreading. The more good, the holier, the richer, the more generous the king is, and the more he loves his subjects to the point of laying down his life rather than allowing one who lives in his kingdom to be touched. The more esteemed and loved that kingdom is, and this arouses in all the desire to live in that kingdom. Now, it's watching the thing operating in Louisa, watching her struggling with it, watching her making mistakes. And I love when the Lord tells us she's wrong. I thought this is wonderful. Not because she's wrong, because it's okay for us to make mistakes. And it's okay for us to come back and the Lord corrects us and you learn the next time. And so the reality of the thing is there. Whereas if this was just simply dictated in words and you wrote it down, who would know how to live it? Who would know what struggles there were with it? Who would know that if you make a mistake, they just say to the Lord, look, I'm sorry, I've done it again. You know, or like a child coming back and saying, I scratched my knee again. Or I spoiled my dress again. And that's us going back to confession. I've done it again, you know. And it's the infinite love of the parent you're going back to with this scratch again. The mistake again. I forgot again. You know what I mean? And you're learning how to come back. You're learning it's okay. That's why watching it filter through Louisa is vital for the rest of us. I think so anyway. What do you think? So he said, even more, they will compete with each other to see who might get such a fortune. Therefore, the good functioning of the kingdom and its importance derive from the knowledge of the king. How will they get it? By watching this soul relating to him. One of the fascinating things for me in all of these writings is the relationship that Louisa has with him. And when Louisa tells him, I've counted at least four times up to now, one has to have patience with you. I think this is brilliant. This is a real relationship. This is a real relationship. And that's what the Lord is trying to tell us. You have a real relationship with him and he will relate to you as if nobody else exists. That's what you need, isn't it? Every relationship needs to be unique. By saying that you do not want to be braided with my will, you would want the kingdom without the king. You would want the knowledge without the master. You would want the possessions without the owner. Well, the children wouldn't want the house without the parents, would they? Not if they're little, anyway. Okay. Notice I didn't say adults. What would happen to this kingdom, to this knowledge and to these possessions? They have to be owned by somebody. There's a wonderful statement in Isaiah where when he gets to a stage where things are getting really rough, he puts all his teachings in the hearts of his disciples. And therefore, the book of Isaiah actually spans about 200 years. It's Isaiah and his disciples who are teaching it. What does Jesus do when things are getting really bad? He concentrates on his 12 apostles. He puts all his knowledge into the hearts of just 12 men, and even one of them failed. And he still gets it out to the world. And so it has to be lodged in a person, and it has to be lodged in other persons in order to pass it on as well. What would happen to this kingdom, to the knowledge and to the possessions? How many disorders, how many ruins would not occur? In other words, we wouldn't know how to recover from a difficulty. And I do not know how to do disordered things, Jesus said. On the contrary, the first thing with me is order. Okay, it's the divine order. So, see, this would have happened in redemption. This would have happened in redemption if my dear mother had not wanted to make known that she was my mother. Now, there you have the answer to a question that 20th century scholars have grappled with and didn't come to any conclusion about. Who told everybody about the incarnation? Who told everybody about the Annunciation? Who told everybody about the birth of Jesus? Was it Joseph? No, he was dead before Jesus was an adult. Our Blessed Lady did. Okay. Look at that. If she had not wanted to make known that she was my mother, and that she had conceived me in her virginal womb, that she nourished me with her milk. So there's the revelation coming from Mary herself. My coming upon the earth, my redemption would give of the incredible. And no one would have been moved to believe and to take the goods contained in it. On the other hand, because my mother made known who she was, the one who was exempt from every stain, also of origin, of original sin, a prodigy of grace, and how she loved all creatures as her tender children, and for love of them, she sacrificed the life of her Son and God. Redemption received importance, became more accessible to the human mind, and formed the kingdom of redemption with its copious effect. Somebody had to incorporate all of this and give it out. Now notice we have to share what we've learned. There has to be testimony. So, braiding my mother with the work of redemption was nothing other than giving more importance to the great good which I came to do upon the earth. Having to be visible to all, taking on human flesh, I had to use a creature from the human race, whom I had to exalt above all in order to accomplish my high designs. And you know from many other passages in these writings that Jesus said he couldn't become incarnate unless there was somebody on the earth who was sinless. He couldn't, because you can't mix sin and holiness. You can't do it. And so Mary became the Ark of the Covenant. And so she contained within her the one who was the Word incarnate, representing the tablets of the law, and the one who was the Saviour himself, that the High Priest. So that's the branch that budded. So she's the Ark of the Covenant, holding this message. And then we become containers of this wonderful gift of the divine will as well. And insofar as we can live it, we're able to give it to others. Now, if this happened in order to form the kingdom of my redemption upon the earth, in the same way, having to form the kingdom of my will, it's necessary that another creature be known in whom the true reigning of my will must have its origin and beginning. In other words, the church has to witness this. Who she is, how much I loved her, and how I sacrificed her for all and for each one. Now, that's a very important statement there, because it comes up elsewhere. Even Louisa said, "But I'm doing nothing, only sitting here." Do you know what I mean? And the Lord said that the church will only know after your death how much you have actually been sacrificed for the church, that you had no life, if I can put it that way. You had no life of your own. In a word, everything that my will has disposed and poured into her. But by braiding you with the divine will, it's always my will that stands out. Because that's obvious from all these writings, isn't it? It's always the divine will that stands out. These are ways and means in order to make it known. These are attractions, spurs, lights, magnets, in order to draw everyone to come and live in this kingdom of happiness, grace, peace and love. Therefore, let your Jesus do it. Now, he tells her that quite frequently. Let me do it. Who loves you very much and do not want to afflict yourself and even less worry about the way I carry out the braiding of my will with you. Think only of continuing your flight in the eternal expanses of my supreme volition. You're going to hear a lot about that last sentence once you get over volume 20. You're going to hear a lot about it. So December the 6th, we're going into flying eagles. Okay. Jesus flings the soul in flight within the immensity of his will. Okay. Louisa said, I was praying and my most sweet Jesus made himself seen in my interior with his gaze fixed on me. So that's your Luke 17, 21 again. And I, drawn by his gaze, looked at him deep into his interior. Now, there's a very, very deep union. Not only can Jesus look deeply into my interior, but I can look deeply into his. Which seemed to be like a crystal. Now, do you see the crystal turning up again? At some stage, we'll talk about crystals. But in Revelation 4, the crystals come up again. The sea of glass is a sea of crystal in Revelation 4. In which one could see all that my beloved Jesus was doing. I just find that absolutely fantastic. She's looking into what appears to be a crystal ball and she sees everything that he's doing. Now, if you've read the life of Anna Maria Tighe, no, she lived at the time of Napoleon. Wonderful woman. Oh, incredible woman. She was the mother of six sons. And she was so tiny when she died, she didn't look as if a cat would fit inside in her. But she was given an incredible gift that the Lord would put a crystal ball, that's what I'm putting it here, in front of her. Cardinals, bishops, priests, abbots, politicians, everybody came to her tiny hovel in Rome. She lived within walking distance of the Vatican. In a tiny hovel, great poverty. And they'd all come to her for advice. And she would just simply look at that and she would be able to tell them everything about themselves and their future and their past and everything else. She got more people repenting than anybody else. She made a saint out of Napoleon's mother because she told her that if she didn't do repentance for Napoleon, there's no way his soul would be saved. And the mother became quite literally a saint, guided by her. She's wonderful, wonderful. Her body is preserved in the Trastevere in Rome. And it's the only incorrupt body in which the marriage ring is quite clearly displayed. It's really wonderful. I just thought it was fantastic to see it, you know. So that's the crystal. So we went to crystal at some other stage, but not now. So I could see, she said, what my beloved Jesus was doing. And uniting myself with him, I tried to do what he was doing. At other times, it seemed to me that Jesus would take my soul in his hands. So it's like as if that crystal, she was taking his soul in her hands. It's amazing. You see, the way she puts it, at other times, it seemed that he would take my soul in his hands. Okay, so he's looking at it. Would fling it in flight within the immensity of his will, telling me, the newborn of my will, you were born in my will, and in the divine will do I want you to live. Fly, fly. That's the eagles. That's Proverbs 30, verses 18 to 19. The mystery of the eagle in flight. Fly, fly, he said, in the eternal volition. Fulfill your office. See what needs to be done between the divinity and creatures. Go around through all the generations, but always in my will. Otherwise, you'll not find them all. And loving, operating, repairing, adoring for all, You will bring yourself before the Divine Majesty to give everything to the Divine Majesty, to give him all the love and all the homage of all humanity and every one of them individually as the firstborn. Isn't that absolutely fantastic? But he tells her, fly in the divine will. You find out what needs to be done and you decide to do it. And then bring it all to the throne. I think that's fantastic. That he's asking you to take the initiative, not to be told all the time what to do. Okay, I think that's wonderful. So Louisa said, I would take flight, which she didn't have an option if he threw her. Okay, and him throwing her into flight, I see that as a man throwing a ball into the air. I think that's fantastic. I would take flight, she said, and Jesus would follow my flight with his gaze. But who can say what I would do? Watch this now. In his will, she said, I could find all the love that his will was to give to the creatures. And because they wouldn't take it, it was suspended waiting to be taken. Okay, because we heard in the last message it was thrown back. So, number one, I would make this love my own. And investing all created intelligence with it. Number two, I would form for each thought an act of love, adoration, and of all that each intelligence was supposed to give to God. Number three, and embracing everything within myself, as though placing everyone on my lap, I would set off for heaven to place them on the lap of the Celestial Father. I love the statement, I would set off for heaven. A small child saying, I am going back into the house and I'm giving this to my daddy. And that's that. But they're only coming in from the garden. I think it's a most beautiful statement. So number four, saying to him, and this is the prayer, Holy Father, I come to your throne to bring you on my lap all your children. Now she's the firstborn, a newborn, and she's carrying the whole of humanity on her lap. Try and make a picture out of that one. Bring them all to you on my lap, all your children, your dear images created by you. Images, Romans 8:29. And also Genesis 1:27. So I'm bringing all your dear images created by you in order to place them on your divine lap again, that you may bind and tie. Now, the issue here is binding and tying because they've been separated, haven't they? To bind and tie once again that will which they had broken between you and them. It is the little daughter of your will who asks this of you. In other words, you've got to be in the divine will to do this. I am little, it's true, but I take on the commitment to satisfy you for all. Now, where have we heard that expression before? You've heard it in the hours of the Passion, where Jesus tells the Father from the cross, I take responsibility to make satisfaction for all. And he says several times, if more is needed, give me more pains. I'm answering for them all, the whole lot of them. There's going to be no soul that has not been represented in redemption. I think it's fantastic. I will not depart from your throne, Louisa says, if you do not bind the human will with the divine, so that as I take the divine will to the earth, the kingdom of your will may come upon the earth. Nothing is denied to the little ones, because Jesus has said over and over again, it's very difficult to deny somebody in his will. Because what they ask is nothing other than the echo of your will. You see, that's the brilliant bit about praying in the divine will. We're actually praying what God wants. It's what you yourself want. And then she said, I would bring myself to Jesus, who was waiting for me in my little room, and he would receive me in his arms, covering me with kisses and caresses. Can you see the family event here? The child is asked to do something, shall we say, to the grandfather. Okay, comes back and the daddy is waiting with all the hugs and the kisses and the affirmations and everything. And that is to say, yes, you've done the right thing. Now you'll do it again, won't you? I mightn't be around to give you all the hugs and kisses the next time, but you know what to do. Because the affirmation that the child receives says, yeah, that was the right thing. Okay. And so Jesus is actually treating her as a very small child here. But spiritually, we are very small children. And Jesus would say, my little one, in order for the will of heaven to descend upon the earth, it is necessary that all, ring the little word all, human acts be sealed and glazed with the acts of the divine will. Now, that is the answer to a major problem that I asked a couple of years ago and nobody could answer for me. And that is, can you change other people's acts into the divine will? And the answer is no. You can seal them and glaze them with the acts of the divine will. You can make them much better in the eyes of God. But an act is the way it was in its origin. If something is wrong, I cannot make it right. If I'm praying for someone back there and something was wrong, I cannot make it right. Okay. If something was a purely human act, I cannot make it divine. I'm not divine. But I can go into the divine will and I can take the good acts and I can bring them and seal them. This is what he's saying, and glaze them with my own acts in the divine will. Isn't that wonderful? You've done something great for that person. But you can't make their acts divine, because that was the thing that we were discussing at that particular point. We had great discussions about it and nobody had answers. But it's as clear as anything here. It's necessary that all human acts be sealed and glazed with the acts of the divine will, so that in seeing all the acts of creatures are smothered, look at it, with its will. That's like saying they're all coated in butter, if I can, excuse me for putting it like that. Drawn by the powerful magnet of its own volition, the supreme will may descend upon the earth to reign on it. To you then, as our firstborn daughter of our will, is this task given. Okay, I'm going to go on until 8 o'clock and then you can have a little discussion and we finish at 8:15, okay? So, number one, know that in order to draw the word from heaven, my mother took on this commitment of going round through all the generations and making all the acts of the human will her own. She placed the divine will in them. Since she possessed so much of this capital of the supreme volition as to surpass everything that all creatures together would possess. And for each round that she did, she multiplied this capital. So, in seeing that one of our most faithful creatures has smothered with so much grace and love all the human acts with the divine will, taking to heart what was needed in order to do this, and in seeing that our will was present in the world, I, the eternal word drawn, descended from heaven. Now, number two, the second commitment befitted me in order to form the redemption. How much I had to go around through all the human acts, taking them all as though in my hand and covering them. Look at this now. Covering them, sealing them, glazing them with my will. Now, please keep those sentences very clear, will you? Because that's the answer to the question you haven't asked yet. Covering them, sealing them and glazing them with my will to draw my celestial Father to look at all the human acts covered with the divine will, which man had rejected into the celestial regions, so that my divine Father might open the doors of heaven, which had been closed to the human will. There is no good that descends if not by means of my will. Now he says that over and over and over again. Now, number three, the third one is yours, he says to Louisa. It befits you, as the firstborn daughter of our will, to add the third seal. Ah, now, would you give yourself a little heading there, S-E-A-L? There's going to be three seals on the human will. That's Mary, Jesus, Louisa. And then we add our little You know the old seals, the red seals they used to have, and then you press them down. And I think we're allowed to press a little bit as well. We're allowed to add our tiny bit as well. So it is to add the third seal of our will upon all the human acts to the first and the second in order to draw the kingdom of my will to come upon the earth. Okay. Now, you see, Jesus was divine and human. Mary was the very special creature. And then Louisa represents us. As far as I'm concerned, every time he talks about Louisa's position, it's us putting our drop of water into the wine of his redemption. Okay. He needs our participation. Therefore, go around, my daughter, over all the human acts of creatures, penetrate even into the hearts. Bring to each heartbeat the heartbeat of my will, to each thought the kiss, the knowledge of my will. Impress in each word the omnipotent fiat. Invade everything, overwhelm everyone into it, that my kingdom may come upon the earth. Now, the way I see this is that if we do what the Lord is saying here, at the moment we have great crisis upon the earth. The nations are absolutely in turmoil. But the divine will manage to get past that. And a certain point will come when people will say, no, we can't have this chaos any longer. We've got to come back to normality. And they won't know that all the people praying in the divine will have brought them to that. It will be their decision. But they have been brought to that, that this intercession was working away quietly in their minds and their hearts, disposing them. And it's the disposing of them is the very important thing. Now, if you went out and fought them, you'd get nowhere. If you argued with them, you'd get nowhere. And look at the divine thing that the Lord has done with us. He's allowed us to influence their minds and their hearts and their souls so that they will see that they must come back to reason and order. I think it's beautiful, you know. And this is where I see the hope for the future, you know, that this intercession is done for them. So impress in each word the omnipotent fiat, invade everything, overwhelm everybody with it in my that my kingdom may come upon the earth. Your Jesus will not leave you alone in these rounds, because we never do it alone. I will assist you and I will guide you in everything. And while he was saying this, Louisa said she continued her flight, going around through everything and everyone. Now, with him assisting, she can do it. But who can say, she said, what I would do? Jesus alone can say it, who made me do it. That's like the parent has asked the child to do something. The child hasn't done it before. So the parent has to actually take them through it and talk them through it. And then there's a possibility that the child could repeat it. Okay. So I spent a night always with Jesus. And while going around, I would bring him all thoughts. And then I'd bring him all words. And also all the works, steps, heartbeats invested by his will. And Jesus would receive everything with love. And he'd make a feast. Because somebody on the earth was doing what Jesus and Mary had done. And then he said to me, do you see what a great difference exists between the sanctity in my will and that of other sanctities? B, I and 1P. The great difference. The first one is for the creature to receive currents of grace, light and love in every instant and to remain in order with her creator in each one of her acts. Therefore, it is the sanctity closest to her creator. The second, that of the other virtues, that is ordinary Christianity, is what I call it, exists at time and we say in time. Exists in time and circumstance whenever the occasion arises. For example, you need an occasion to practice patience. So somebody has to disturb you to get you to practice patience. So never ask for it, will you? I think you get too much of it. You need an occasion for someone to make you go and do an act of obedience. Don't ask for it. charity and the like. In other words, if the occasions don't arise, you can't exercise these virtues. Whereas in the divine will, you're at the peak all the time. And it's all the divine virtues that are flowing through you. I think it's brilliant. And if the occasions don't arise, then the virtues remain interrupted and without growth. So you sit back and nothing happens, you see. And they can't receive the good that which the virtue in act, that is, as you do it, contains. On the other hand, in the sanctity of my will, there are no stops and no interruptions. Have you noticed that? You wake up at night, that's still going on in your head. My will is always fixed on darting through the creature. She can receive it at every instant. Whether she breathes, thinks, speaks, palpitates, takes food, or sleeps. Look at your sleeps. I find sleep is very interesting in the divine will, if you get any. Everything enters into my volition, he said, and in every instant she can be filled with my will together with all the goods that it contains. Now, in comparing the two, you wouldn't touch the other one, would you? And yet the strange thing is the other one is much more familiar to us and we cling to it. And so we have to let it go and make ourselves permanently available to the divine will. You see, the problem, well, one of the problems we have is like we like being in control. And we like to know, I am doing this and it will do that or whatever. That's you being in control. Whereas opening up to the divine will, he's in control. That's much harder. Until you get used to it, and then it's wonderful. The next one is too long. I'm going to stop there and we can have a discussion.